Today, we will take a look at the school budget crunch.
It's hard when you live in a town where you don't think that this is going to happen. That's why you moved to Andover, right?
So that's parent Kate Squillichotti talking to WBZ. And it's not just Andover. Districts from Braintree to Framingham to Marblehead are struggling to pencil in the money this year, prompting worries about layoffs and other potential cuts. Why? Well, that's our question today, and in a moment, we'll hear from a pair of superintendents about the financial challenges they face. But first, we'll start with Doug Howgate, president of the Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation, because he's going to lay out for us how we pay for education in the Commonwealth. I spoke with Doug yesterday, and he told me that to fund schools, you have to figure out two things: how much they cost and who pays for them.
What the state instituted about 30 years ago is something called the foundation budget, where given the number of kids you have, what grade they're in, their socioeconomic demographics, we're going to put that all into a formula, which you could do at home if you wanted to dedicate about a week of your time to figuring it out.
I do not.
Okay, based on that, your foundation budget is X number of dollars. That's the first critical component of the formula. And then what they do is they say, okay, and of that X, we're going to figure out how wealthy you are as a community, and we're going to say, you come up with this part of X, and we're going to come up with the difference. That's basically the two parts of the formula.
Okay, so what we're talking about, of course, overall today, Doug, is the fact that schools, lots of them, are coming short, right? So I'm going to play a little sound here. Karen Carey, who's a Braintree parent, this is at a Save Our Schools rally this month. Braintree is facing an $8 million gap, and this sound is from WFXT.
The schools basically are what determine whether a town is a good town or not. And if our schools crumble, our town's going to crumble.
So, you know, $8 million gap there, the schools determine whether a town is good or not. And what I'm honing in on there is all that money, all that formula, the way you just laid out. But some towns can spend a lot more if they want to than what they're allocated and required. And other towns can't, right?
In fact, most communities spend more than what they are required to spend, that foundation budget effectively that we just talked about. And so that does create some disparities between communities. Now, what I will say is in 2019, the state passed a big bill called the Student Opportunity Act, which effectively tried to look at that calculation we talked about. How much does it cost to educate your kids? And really upscale that to make sure it's appropriately accounting for low-income students, students who for whom English is a second language, and try to modernize the cost components of that to more appropriately reflect reality. So two things are happening there. One, we're expanding the pool of students who are counted as low-income, and we're significantly increasing the additional amount you get if you have a higher for each low-income student you have, depending on that concentration of low-income students.
Count so more students, more money per student you count.
Exactly, especially if you have the higher the share of low-income students you have, the more you get per student. One of the things that has happened over the last few years with the implementation of this school funding reform, the Student Opportunity Act, is as a lot of new state aid has gone to low-income communities, the way the formula works statewide is most of the financial contribution comes from the local level. And so there's been this kind of unintended element where the required local contributions for a number of communities have gone up significantly. And so we're asking local communities to contribute more when the state's not necessarily always coming to the table with more. And that's created some real local public finance pressures in other communities.
All right. So let me see if I can sort of feed that back to you. So it gets more expensive. Cities and towns have to put more money into the pot, but the state's not necessarily putting as much in, or you used to get to spend a lot extra, out of your pocket money left over after you put into the pot, and now you don't have as much pocket money to spend extra. So maybe what, you were spending 30% extra before, and now you can only spend 10% extra? Is that what we're talking about, Doug?
In some communities, yes. And let me try to explain it in a slightly different way, which is, so the way the formula is set up is, as the Student Opportunity Act, as this education finance reform has gone into effect, the state has dedicated a lot of new money to the cohort of communities with the least ability to pay, right? So a lot of money's gone to low-income communities educating a lot of low-income students, which was absolutely the intent of the bill. But the way the formula works is, okay, is that money's going into that side of the ledger. The share that the locals have to come up with continues to grow as well. And the ability to pay isn't going to be found in necessarily the low-income communities. And so instead, you can have a ratcheting up of required contributions in other communities that, exactly as you say, might then eat into that above that amount they're spending over and above what was required before.
Where's inflation in all of this? Stuff just costs more.
Great question. The school finance formula has had in it for 30 years a cap on inflation, right? A cap on how much cost can grow from year to year. And in the last 2 years, actual inflation has exceeded that cap. And you hear from a number of communities, understandably, this idea that, hey, we've had our costs grow by higher than the inflation cap. How do we adjust for that? Now, what I will say is the reforms that were put in place in 2019 that is going to result in billions of dollars in additional state spending on low-income communities, one of the things that allows that to happen is making sure you build in cost certainty into the formula as well. And you do that in ways like putting a cap on inflation, right? You've got to be able to manage these costs long-term in the state budget. But I think it's part of this bigger picture of how is the state going to be able to afford continued significant increases for low-income communities. One of the ways to do that is to make sure we're keeping our kind of cost exposure related to inflation in a way that we can project from year to year.
Okay, so I guess my last question is, have we built a train wreck? And if so, is it a one-year train wreck, a couple years of train wreck, or an ongoing train wreck for school budgets in cities and towns?
It's not a train wreck. It's that the car needs to be repaired every 10 years, right? Now, in 2019, a huge set of repairs was necessary to say, you know what? We're not appropriately accounting for how much it costs to educate low-income students. We're shortchanging the districts with the hardest, the biggest challenges in terms of educating kids from low-income communities. And so those were the repairs that were put in place in 2019. What we're seeing now is we may need some new repairs in the next couple of years, right? And it probably, again, gets back to the how do we distribute who pays state and local. There's no easy answers there, but we got to tinker with it a little more.
So that's Doug Howgate of the Massachusetts Taxpayers Foundation. He joined me yesterday here in Studio 2 on Radio Boston to lay out how we pay for schools, right? So now we're going to turn to two people who are dealing with the realities on the ground. Nan Murphy is superintendent of schools in Dedham, and Stephen Zreich is superintendent in Salem. Both districts are facing the prospect of significant cuts and redistribution of resources, including personnel. I want to thank you both for coming. Welcome, Superintendent Murphy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And welcome, Superintendent Zreich.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity.
So listen, in a few minutes, we'll dive more into, you know, what's happening in your budgets and how it's going to hit in the schools. But I know you had a chance to hear the explanation of how all of this works. And I want to start there, Superintendent Nan Murphy of Dedham. Do you agree with what you just heard? Is that how it feels like it plays out for you as superintendent?
Well, I will first say, as a first-year, first-time superintendent, it is not a budget that I'm pleased to be presenting to our community. I do understand and validate all that was just shared with us. However, Dedham has been in a very unique situation in that we have been lucky to receive some of the support through some of those avenues of state aid that were mentioned. So we are actually in a better scenario than most communities.
So it's tough, but state aid has actually made it less tough than it might be otherwise, Nan Murphy?
For the District of Dedham, yes.
All right. So Stephen Zreich, how about you?
Yeah, so Salem is a very interesting community, and I've heard Doug speak on this before. We are one of the highest need districts. We're a gateway city in Massachusetts, but our perceived ability to pay in the formula does not work for us, in the sense that the share, he described how the share of allocation is growing on the city side, and that is happening here in Salem. Their expected contribution continues to grow, even though our population continues to get more needy by the minute in Salem. And so the burden is falling more on the city, a city that has contributed well above net school spending for many, many years, but it's becoming more and more crunched to be able to do so. We are not seeing what we believe is an adequate share of our Student Opportunity Act dollars. And so that's been challenging for us. not just this year, but over the last few years since the reform was implemented.
So Student Opportunity Act was the sort of the fix to the car that Doug Howgate talked about in 2019. And what I think I hear you saying, Superintendent Zreich, is you've got more needy students coming in, but the amount you have to pay into that foundation pot is outstripping what you're getting, and you're feeling a crunch. So listen, we're going to come back to you in a couple of minutes. As we do, I want to dive into what that crunch looks like when you have to sort of allocate it across your schools. Nan Murphy of Dedham, Stephen Zreich of Salem, stay with us. We're looking forward to more conversation with you in just minutes. I'm Tisiana Deering. You're listening to Radio Boston. We are asking why school districts across the state are facing large deficits this year, or could be facing deficits. Still with us, Dedham Superintendent Nan Murphy and Salem Superintendent Stephen Zreich, as we take a look at school budget holes in districts across the state, both districts bracing for cuts in the face of budget challenges. So, Nan Murphy in Dedham, you said a few minutes ago, first-year superintendent, not thrilled to present the budget that I'm about to present. Give me some specifics. Why?
Well, as mentioned previously, we are facing a deficit. So in order for me to present a level service budget moving forward for FY25, I would need to ask our community to support a 12% increase. So unfortunately, that is not within the realm of possibility. So our budget is facing a deficit, and we are going forward asking for an 8.6, which is still exceeds anything that the community of Dedham has been asked in the past.
So 8.6% increase in taxes on local residents, Nan Murphy, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, keep going.
It's a $4.4 million request. Again, nowhere near what we need for a level service.
And if you don't get the $4.4 million, what happens?
So the 4.4 equates to a $1.9 million gap. So we will be facing about, at this point, 12 full-time employee reduction in staff, and that's going to be about a 1% reduction.
Stephen Zreich over in Salem, what does it look like for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, similar to Dedham, we, you know, for us to fully fund what we need would be upwards of 10 to 11% increase from one year to the next. And that's not sustainable for the city and for this community. And what's happened for us is there's a confluence of things that are causing the deficit. One is the sunsetting of the pandemic relief dollars. That's a big part of it. And there's some really mission critical roles that are that we've used post pandemic. There's substantial increase in just doing business, the non-personnel expenses that you referenced before. And so that's those increases are unlike anything I've ever seen in my now. This is my 11th year as a school superintendent. We're in the midst of negotiating with our largest union, our teachers union. And, we definitely want to be competitive in paying our staff appropriately. And so that's another, our contract expires at the end of the school year. And so we need to plan for that. And then our student needs are shifting. And so we have more multilingual learners and special education students. And there's requisite supports that come with serving those students well. And so we want to make sure that we fund that appropriately. And so all of those things are coming together to make this a very complex budget.
So you've said, you need a 10 to 11% increase in spending from the city. It's not realistic for the city. So what gets cut, Stephen Zreich?
Yeah, so we're not able to keep every position that was funded on the ESSER pandemic relief dollars. We have to eliminate about 12 positions across the district. And we're also relying on reserve funds that we haven't, we're budgeting as tightly as possible, and we're using funds that we would typically use for contingency that we're forced to use. Otherwise, we think we'd significantly compromise the experience for young people and staff in our schools. So, you know, it's unsettling. I mean, it's challenging, but we do think that we, with our plan, we can move forward. It does set up future challenges as well, as you know, unless something changes more significantly, this could be a yearly thing for school districts across the state of Massachusetts.
We have two superintendents with us here on Radio Boston, Stephen Zreich of Salem, Nan Murphy of Dedham, and we're talking about what both of you have just said, that you could be cutting 12 full-time positions. You're both looking at deficits. Unrealistic to ask the cities and towns in which you run school districts to meet the gap in spending. Nan Murphy, what are you hearing from parents?
Well, I'm hearing appreciation for our situation. So I think my deputy superintendent, Dr. Ian Kelly, and I have been making a very strategic effort to get out in front of this and to be really transparent with where we are with the budget. So we have held a number of community forums regarding the budget. We have held forums for our staff regarding the budget so that they all understand these drivers and how these budget drivers are really beyond the control of our districts. So our transportation costs are up $1.2 million. Our out-of-district costs are up 92, almost 1%. And our district, although very fortunate to receive a 6% increase in enrollment, with that comes unanticipated costs. So our community, from what I'm hearing, is they're disappointed and worried, but they understand that it's not mismanagement. It's not a central office issue, that it is really a broader issue that not only involves local stakeholders, but state level stakeholders.
So Stephen Zreich of Salem, our producer Rob Lane reached out to Max Page, president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. Here's one of the things he said.
My own town where I went to school and my three children went to school, which is Amherst, they're facing a loss of 15 or more full-time educators just in the middle and high school. That can be devastating. And it's in Braintree, it may be up to 100. It's all across the state.
You know, I'm mindful you talked about, 12 full-time positions across the district. You're in the middle of a teacher's contract negotiation. There have been some pretty contentious contract negotiations. I'm thinking about the Newton strike after Newton didn't pass a request for more funding. All of that weighing on my mind. Some of this, you said, came from COVID money that's gone. What about that part? I mean, we all knew it was going to go away at some point. Was there planning the city could have done to at least anticipate that part, Stephen Zreich?
Yeah, I mean, we did plan, and that's why we're able to add many of the we're adding 22 positions that were on ESSER to our operating budget.
ESSER is COVID money for listeners.
COVID money. Yeah, exactly. So that's, we are adding those positions. We were very clear with the community that many of the positions that we were adding would have to be eliminated after the money ran out. And we were also clear that we were working to bring some of the positions, like our pre-K expansion. We hired health teachers. We felt that those were critical to maintain, and we are bringing those positions onto the operating budget. So I think we've tried, like Nan mentioned, try to be as transparent as possible, forecast this for people well in advance. We've tried in our budget booklet this year, we just presented it to the public, the school committee on Monday night, to be as transparent as possible, clear as possible in the forums that we've held, that, the decisions we're making, we don't think, we really do believe that we're going to, that we'll be able to continue the good work that's happening in our schools. We've had to make some difficult and strategic decisions, we're trying to be as clear as possible and explain the choices that we've made in order to, we have a strategic plan that lasts the next 2 years, and we want to make sure we deliver on those results.
In a word, Nan Murphy, and I'm sorry to bring it down to this, but I've got like 10 seconds for you. Is it worth it? Is it worth it?
100%. Absolutely.
There you go. Nan Murphy, superintendent of schools in the town of Dedham. Stephen Zreich, superintendent in Salem Public Schools. Thanks for being with us. And I wish The best to both of you and to your school districts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay with us. When we come back to you, Sonia Chang-Diaz, former state senator, will join us. She led the push for the change in the school funding formula in 2019, and we will talk about it, what she's heard, and what comes next. We're staying on this story. I'm Tiziana Deering. You're listening to Radio Boston. We're spending the hour looking at why school districts across the state are finding themselves in financial straits, and it's a complicated picture. One piece of the school funding puzzle that has come up is the Student Opportunity Act. It's from 2019, and it updated a 30-year-old formula for how we fund schools in Massachusetts. The update funneled more resources towards low-income students and students learning English, and it also boosted required educational spending overall. Getting it passed was a fight. And so now the question is it working as intended? Sonia Chang-Diaz was one of the architects of that bill. She served as state senator from the 2nd Suffolk from 2009 to 2023. She ran for governor as well. Sonia, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me back, Tiziana.
So you've been listening, right? We heard from Doug Howgate of Mass Taxpayers Foundation on how schools get funded, what needs to change. We've heard from superintendents of Dedham and Salem who are feeling the squeeze, could be cutting as much as 12 staffing positions across each district. In listening across all this, what sort of stood out for you so far?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head a second ago, Tiziana, when you said it's complicated, right? There's a multiplicity of variables that impact school finance, right? You've got a range of funding partners, right, from the local property tax base to the state to the Fed. Particularly now with over the last few years with the federal pandemic relief funding, right? There was a huge influx of money. You heard Superintendent Strike talk about that ESSER money. That's the federal pandemic relief sunsetting and the impact that that's having on districts across the state. So there's a lot of factors going in. And then there are a lot of factors that influence just when you take that state slice, how much funding flows to any given district in any given year. So, I'm so glad that you did this show, right? Because it's not as simple as it may sound and feel to folks. And I know as a parent, right, I'm struggling with this right in the trenches. My school district, my school in particular, where my son is facing budget cuts just as are everybody else across Boston and across the state. So this is something that almost every district, if not every district, is feeling the pinch on.
When 2019, when the legislation was passed, right, it was a fight. And there had been several attempts prior to that to pass something more, I don't mean to editorialize when I say moderate, right, but more middle
That's
of
fair.
The road, right?
Yep.
Okay, and the push was to what actually happened, which emphasized much more heavily low-income districts, increasing who was counted as a low-income student, increasing the funding for low-income students, increasing money for students who were English language learners, et cetera. We heard Doug Howgate say that part's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This piece that is the pressure on some districts in doing that, you got to pay more in, right? Did you see that piece coming, the pressure that would come from there?
Well, I think, we did see that coming, but I, appreciated what Doug said, that most districts that can pay more already are, and good on them, right? They recognize that the foundation budget really is, as the term would suggest, right? The foundation is like the ground floor. It's not everything that one might want in a fantastic education for your children. And so most districts already were spending more if they could afford it. And so even though the Student Opportunity Act did increase required local contribution for some districts, in real life, it did not bump up the spending requirement, the actual dollars that those districts would need to spend because they were already spending it.
But if they're spending it into the state pool, do they get it all back again?
Oh, so to clarify, right, there's the what's called above net school spending, right, above what you're required by the state, does not go into the state pool. It stays in the locality where that contribution is being made.
Yeah. All right. So what about this inflation piece, right? Because this is the other thing. And actually, I'm gonna play a little bit of sound here. I'm looking for some sound that we have. Here it is. This is Max Page, president of the Mass Teachers Association, speaking to our producer, Rob Lane, talking about the 4.5% inflation cap in the school budget formula and the way it's created challenges.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when you have inflation that ran 7 and then 8%, that you can do the math there, even if you fully, raise the school funding by the 4.5%, you have a big gap there.
And so, the argument is, okay, well, you covered half of what the new thing now costs, but it costs twice that now forever. Mm-hmm. What do we do about that, Sonia Chang Diaz?
Yeah, it's a big problem. It's a big tension in the law. As Doug alluded to, one of the things that helps get a big change in the law passed is to have, for state budget writers to have some level of predictability and certainty about what their financial exposure is going to be in the state budget for this law. That's the benefit of putting an inflation cap in.
Meaning that you don't have to ride the inflation train no matter what it is.
Right. Then you're not exposed to these huge, volatile ups and downs. Really just ups. because the state makes a guarantee we'll never go down, right?
Yeah.
No community gets a reduction in any given year relative to what they got last year, even if their school population goes down. But the downside of the inflation cap, and it's a big one, and that's why I haven't been a fan of the inflation caps, is that it leaves school districts and ultimately children holding the bag, right? Inflation doesn't cease to exist just because at the state level we put on blinders and say, we don't see it. It still costs that money to buy the pencils, the paper, the school transportation, the gas bill, all of that. And school districts have to find it or they have to cut it. And so ultimately it does still leave kids and school districts and local families holding the bag. And many communities have to go back to their voters and ask for those Prop 2.5 overrides, as we heard is happening in Dedham. I do just want to call out here that when I think about the Student Opportunity Act and the budget crunch that districts are in right now, I think it's important to call out the sort of silent successes that the SOA is, creating in
student
our state.
Student Opportunity Act of 2019. Go ahead.
Thank you. Were it not for the SOA, I think that we would be seeing hemorrhaging of positions of staffing going on in the lowest income communities across the state, right? Much as we are seeing those budget crunches and those cutting of positions in districts like Salem and Dedham, we would be seeing, hemorrhaging versions of that in those gateway cities, in the Springfields and the Worcesters and the Lawrences of the state. And it would be so much worse. And I was really also so gratified to hear the superintendent from Dedham, be straightforward and, note that even though they're facing that budget crunch in Dedham, it would be so much worse were it not for the state aid that Dedham is getting from the SOA. So in some ways it is doing its job. It's working as intended, but there are larger forces at play that the SOA cannot sort of fully fill in for.
We're speaking with former State Senator Sonia Chang Diaz as we've spent this hour looking at school districts across the state that are finding themselves in a severe financial crunch. I want to say I'll be honest with you. I'm not completely clear if Dedham is specifically seeking an override to Prop 2.5.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'm
not sure if they are or not, but they may be. And I want to stay there for a minute. So, when we decide to do this show, State Senator Sonia Chang Diaz, we think to ourselves, wait a minute, this is popping up all over the state. You're seeing, an $8 million shortfall here, a $4 million shortfall here. You're seeing this school district saying we could be looking at 100 positions or it's 10 positions. And it feels like it's sort of happening all at once. This is not a glib question. This is an honest question because you've been in this deep. Does that mean that we had an accident of circumstances and this is a crummy situation? Or does it mean that we had bad policy design somewhere along the way?
That's a really good and fair question. I'm going to say both. we had a couple extraordinarily high years of inflation. It was not, totally unpredictable that would happen, right? Sometimes it does happen, but they were very unusually high years of inflation that now the districts are carrying those costs forever into the future. And we had a much less predictable experience of the pandemic. The increased kinds of student needs, the more intensive student needs that we're seeing in the wake of the pandemic, in terms of social emotional needs and sort of learning loss recovery needs, And, you know, on the good side, right, that huge influx of federal dollars, but now the loss of those federal dollars. And good on districts like Salem. You know, I heard Superintendent Strike say that they are absorbing on their local budget 22 positions that were previously funded by ESSER dollars. Again, it's hard to celebrate in a moment like this, but that's great news, right? That's I see, you know, the sort of a long-term ripple effect of a temporary federal policy that has really shown us what good, you know, more investment in our schools can do. And it's sort of whet the appetites of districts and the state to say, look, this was temporary money, but we don't want to give up the benefit of those positions. And we're going to dig deeper and we're going to find a way to absorb those positions locally.
All right. So in our last, you know, 30 seconds, are you in general hopeful that this is not sort of a, you know, a fall off a cliff, but a thing we can recover from?
I'm both nervous and hopeful. I think that's my perpetual state, you know, as a person who cares about policy. You know, I think, again, what Doug said about every 10 years, you know, the vehicle needs a tune-up. We built into the law, actually, that every 4 years, the state needs to return to the foundation budget and keep tinkering with it and keep learning the lessons from the last few years about how we need to make it better. But there are big forces at play that the state and localities we need to grapple with, right? Prop 2.5 is a huge limiter on cities and towns' ability to even access the local wealth that they have. And that is, you know, that's not going away anytime soon. And I think people need to get loud about that.
All right. Former State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz from here in Massachusetts, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tiziana.